this committee meeting to order. President Representative Gutenberg, Olson, Seaton, Wilson, and Chair Johnson. Today, we will take up HB 70, Alaska-grown agricultural products, and time permitting, almost with certainty, we will be talking about HB 43, gooey duck, aquatic farming, and seed transfer. With that, we left the HB 70. We still had public testimony was still open. So with that, I would like to know if there's anyone in the room to testify on HB 70, Alaska-grown agricultural products. Anyone in the room? Going once, going twice. No one in the room. Is there anyone online who would like to testify on HB 70? Seeing and hearing none, we will close public testimony. Representative Gatto, if we could get you to join us at the table for committee discussion.
If I could have my assistant with me.
You certainly may.
Thank you, sir.
Say no.
No.
I can do it.
There goes the brain power.
Representative Wilson suggested it, and that's just, you know, I always do what she says.
I'll pay back. Never
mind. Yeah. Representative Gatto, just before you get started, we have Francie Havermeister and Doug Warner online, and they have stated questions only. And before you get started, Francie or Doug, you guys did you want to provide testimony or just be here to answer questions?
Pardon me, you cut out right at the end.
Do you want to testify or just answer questions?
We are here just to answer questions.
Okay, thank you. That's what I had you down
and
for.
Who are they?
Francie Havermeister, would you? Is with the Division of Agriculture. And Doug, who are you with?
I'm also with the Division of Agriculture.
Okay, thank you. And let the record reflect, we've been joined by Representative Tuck. We have closed public testimony. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of course, I would love for Sandra to do it, but House Bill 70 is a way to get farm products into the classroom and to enable the schools to also have small plots of ground or even an entire farm where they can ally with local farming. And it allows that. Now, I believe Representative Seaton had an amendment which actually improves on the bill, but we're not there yet. So, Sandra, introduce.
My name is Sandra Wilson. For the record, I'm staff to Representative Gatto. Last time, I know you adopted the CS, but we didn't go over what the changes to the bill were. We removed three sections of the bill. Sections 4, 6, and 7 were removed. Section 6 we removed because after talking with the Department of Health and Social Services, they're actually working on similar. It would do the same thing that what was going to happen in the bill if it had passed, and they're already working on it internally, and we didn't want to mess with the process they already had going on, and they had asked us to remove the section, so we went ahead and removed that. And the other two sections we removed just because we didn't find that they were they weren't really fiscally responsible to do right now.
And Mr. Chair, it essentially took a lot of the money out of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Gatto. Any questions for the sponsor? And taking a lot of money out of the bill, I think, was important on this one. And I do know that we will probably have, there will still be some, and I think we will be having a fiscal note, but I do note that this goes on to the powerful Finance Committee, and we'll let them deal with the money aspect. We'll deal with the policy decisions as it results, as it relates to agriculture. Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you. You skirted over pretty fast, what, 4, 6, and 7. The sections that are taken out. What do they actually do that it's not doing anymore that is being done by somebody else?
And just for the record, we did adopt the CS, and we are talking version R 21209 for the committee.
Okay, section 4 that we removed from the bill had to do with Alaska Grown Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Grant Program, and that program was it dealt with for the fresh fruits and vegetables, as far as it was more towards low income and towards farmers markets and food banks, and the other sections we removed were another one that had to do with food banks, and it would get fruits and vegetables and homegrown products into the food banks. It would set up a pilot program in 2 to 5 communities, and we just didn't find that that was really something that was feasible right now. And then the other section had to do with allowing the use of WIC and food stamps at farmers markets, and that is actually what the Department of Health and Social Services is working on doing currently, and they had asked us to remove that section from the bill.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question satisfactorily? Any other questions of the bill sponsor?
For those online.
Oh, okay. Question for from Representative Gutenberg.
Yeah. Ms. Havermeyer, are you familiar with the program that Calypso Farm is doing in Fairbanks?
Yes, through the chair. This is Francie Havermeister, and yes, I am.
Okay. And how does that fit in with what this bill is doing? Are they doing exactly what this bill strives to do?
I know that there are young people who work within the farm, and some of the food does go back into the school program, but this would be an oversight of the entire state and not just one community, was my understanding.
Okay, so if I may, Mr. Chair, so Calypso Farm does a gardening farming program at 3 or 4 schools in the Fairbanks area.
That's what I understand, and they also hire the youth to come in and work the programs for, I think it's 6-week slots.
Right.
Right.
So would this bill preclude them or take them out of the program or create another state agency that's doing what they're doing?
To answer that, I don't know, only because this program does not talk about hiring youth to come in and work during the summer. This is just putting agriculture into the classroom as far as education and possibly summer gardens. There's a possibility of an overlap, but because the program is kind of vague, I don't really know if I can answer that.
Okay, thank you.
Follow-up question, Gutenberg?
If she doesn't have the answer, then I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. And while you're still in queue, can you give us an ASH update from Anchorage? Do you know what the situation there is?
Yes, currently from Palmer, we have no ASH.
Good enough. That's good. That's good to hear. Representative Seaton.
No fertilizer.
Thank you. I was wondering if the sponsor had if we added the words greenhouses after school gardens, so it was school gardens, greenhouses, and farms, if that would be something that would be beneficial to the sponsor.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. No, that's friendly. It's probably an oversight that we just didn't think about it. I think it's a great idea.
Representative Seed, would you speak to that? I know it's not an amendment yet, but if you'd speak to the reasoning behind that just a little bit so they expand for those who haven't seen the amendment exactly right now.
Sure. In this point, what we're talking about is this is relating to school gardens and farms, and schools often would have a greenhouse, and we just want to make sure that there doesn't become a distinction between being able to have your farm in a greenhouse or your garden in a greenhouse, and whether that activity would be prevented by not having the words in the bill. And so it's.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Seaton. And I think that also addresses some of the concerns of students had that testified on a short growing season, and I think that may alleviate some of those problems. Representative Gatto, you have a follow-up to that?
And Mr. Chair, some things can only be grown in greenhouses, and those would be excluded were it not for the additional amendment.
Thank you. And with that, are there any other questions of the sponsor or the Representative Onelines from the Department of Agriculture? Representative Seaton?
Could we address that to the Department of Agriculture, too, just to make sure that they don't have any problems with that?
You may. If you'd go ahead, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And for the Department of Ag, I just wanted to find out whether including, instead of just school gardens and farms, if we included school gardens, greenhouses, and farms, if that raises any problems for the department.
Through the co-chairs, no, there's none.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Chairman.
Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you. Is there anything in this bill? I mean, we have an entity, an educational farm in my community right now that seems like it's doing this already. Is there anything in this bill that would prevent Calypso Farms from becoming the agent, taking a grant to administer this program in Fairbanks, I see that there is a part of the bill that allows for grants, but is that allowed under this bill to allow somebody to take over the management of this program? I mean, not just in my community. Let's say somebody in Sitka is doing it already or somewhere else.
And this is to the Department of Agriculture?
To the department, right.
Oh, through the co-chair, not that I'm aware of, though we don't have a fiscal note in there to pass through grants, so a fiscal note would have to be addressed somewhere.
Okay. All right.
Any additional questions of the sponsor or the Department of Agriculture? Representative Seaton.
And another question was on page 6, where the requirement on lines 11 through 13, where it says a gardener farm must be used for educational purposes and the growing fruits and vegetables for consumption by the students through the school's district meal and snack program. And the question was whether excess produce could be sold if the revenues were used to support the program. Seems like that would make the program much more self-sufficient, and I was wondering if the sponsor and the department had positions on that.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that turns revenues, if there are any, back into the program, and I think everyone in the state would applaud that.
Ms. Havemeister, do you have a comment on that?
That would be a possibility.
And I want to caution, and I don't want to speak against the amendment because I do think it makes sense and I think there's a valuable lesson to be learned, but I certainly don't want to see the state get in competition with private growers. So I would hope that this doesn't get out of hand, and very important that the revenues used would only go back in to support the program. So I want to be on the record to make sure that as I see your potential amendment, I do say that it does say to go back to use the program, but I don't want to set a situation up where our schools are in competition with our farmers who have enough difficulty as it is. So thank you. Any other questions on that? Representative Seaton, would you like to offer an amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton, are you going to divide these into two amendments, or are you going to offer them as a single amendment?
I was going to offer it as a single amendment, okay, unless there was an objection.
That would be fine. We'll see how it goes.
And I'd like to offer it as a conceptual amendment because I noticed that the greenhouses need to at least go in the title and other things. So this will be a conceptual amendment. Offered as conceptual amendment number one.
Okay, we have before us conceptual amendment number one, and Representative Seaton, if you want to walk us through that, or I can do it, whichever works for you.
Is there an objection?
There hasn't been an objection. I'll object. Okay, thank you. Just so you can walk through that, and so that we all know exactly what we're looking at.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and what the amendment says is, you know, on page 6, line 10, following gardens, insert greenhouses, and that was kind of the question we asked the sponsor and the department of making sure that this applied not only to school gardens and farms, but greenhouses as well. And so there's a number of lines where that's inserted, as well as, like I said, it would probably need to be in the title as well. That's right, conceptual. And then the second part of this is on line 6, page 6, line 20, inserting a new subsection D to read, when a school garden, greenhouse, or farm is used, excess fruits, or vegetables may be sold if the revenues are used to support the program. And so, Mr. Chairman, I was very concerned, just like you, I don't want us to be converting this into a competition and raising money for whether it's athletics or going to Europe or something else that wasn't part of the greenhouse or the gardens program, because I think that we would be getting into an area that we're not wanting to. But where it goes back in and supports the program, then we make the program itself much more sustainable, which is what we're trying to do with agriculture and teaching of agriculture as well. So that's the purpose of the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Does everyone understand the amendment and what we're trying to do with it and where it's going?
I'll remove my objection.
The objection has been removed. Are there any further objections? Seeing none, conceptual amendment number one passes. That brings before us the bill. Any additional discussion on HB 70? Representative Gutenberg.
Some of the comments that were made. I think this is exactly what I think we want to be doing. I mean, I think we need to be encouraging people to, certainly our students, to understand where the produce comes from. And, you know, if you ask the farmers, I don't think they're concerned about competition. I think they're more concerned about economy of scale, that we don't have enough here. Now, if we have a larger infrastructure in the farming community, then we can establish a larger infrastructure and a larger market. So, I'm signing on, Carl.
And I'm sure he appreciates that. Any additional questions for the sponsor? Seeing none, what would be the will of the body? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move CS for House Bill number 70 as amended. And that's 26 LS 0284/R from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
If you could amend that to say forthcoming fiscal note, Representative Seaton, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, and with forthcoming fiscal notes.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. And before I ask for an objection, do let you know that this does go to finance, and I'm sure they will be scrutinizing that fiscal note with a fine-tooth comb. Are there objections to moving HB 70 amended resources out of committee? Seeing none, congratulations, Representative Gatto. HB 70 has moved out of the House.
And there's Alaska Grove right there.
Out of House resources. Not the House, absolutely.
That too.
I'm trying to listen to the good representative from Fairbanks and talk at the same time. It's not always easy. That brings before us what I think is probably going to be the most fun we've had in a committee in a while. HB 43, Gooey Duck, Aquatic Farming Seed Transfer. Representative Seaton, will you be presenting this or will your staff? So is she the prop master? Is that what we're
saying? That's right.
That's what we're saying. Excellent. Representative Seaton, welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Paul Seaton from Homer, and appreciate the hearing today. And as we start with HB 43, one of the first questions is, what is the gooey duck? And we have a live body visiting us today, if it would be acceptable to you to pass our little friend around.
Representative Seaton, it's not only acceptable, I have said that I wouldn't hear this bill until I had one. So we do have a live gooey duck, and for those of you who are interested, we can. Are you planning on passing it around, or you want us to come up and look at it? Pass it around.
We can pass it around.
Take it out and let's. No, no, that's quite all right.
Does it sit up?
Go ahead. Walk it around with let everybody have a gentle pet.
Can you get it back into the shell?
And for the record, those of us who can't see, you're missing quite a.
Does that all that go back in the shell?
Don't bite it.
No.
It never does, huh?
So this never protrudes. This stays is always out, and it's. So if I understand it, it lives like this, and this is the filtration where it eats?
That's correct.
Excellent.
And then what part do you eat?
Everything except the shell.
Let's take a big bite out of it right now.
Thank you. It's just an amazing texture.
It does.
Oh.
They say it's sweet and crunchy, a little chewy.
Just like chicken.
It's just covered by Bob's bill.
Don't go there.
I started this meeting by saying we would have fun with it.
No.
I would like to thank the committee and thank our prop master. But I would kind of like to get back in order because this bill does have some fairly serious ramifications. So with that, Representative Seaton, thank you for the prop. And I understand that this will be served up his lunch tomorrow in the lounge?
Well, I was...
Maybe not this one, but...
There we go. I was heard that when it might get named and become a pet, we should have some others. So there are some other that are will be served for lunch.
So Bob.
We call it Bob. I don't think we want to have pardoning of the gooey ducks either. So let's proceed, Representative Seaton. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So now that you know what a gooey duck is, why are they important? Gooey ducks are a very valuable species. They're farmed in Alaska and southeastern Alaska. They are valued coming out, and the farm price is $3.75 to $4 a pound. On the retail market in Asia, they can go up to $30 a pound, and they sell them live. If you...
Representative Wilson.
How many pounds was that one?
It's about 3 pounds.
That's about 3 pounds. Harvestable size starts at about a pound and a half to 3 pounds. That's generally the range in which, on a farm, you would be raising them. In the wild, you're taking whatever size they are, as long as they're meet a minimum.
Representative Wilson.
It's like a hen weigh.
How long does it take them to get to that size?
That's probably about 6 years, maybe 7 years.
And then we're taking all that we can, huh?
Well, Representative Wilson, through the chair, this bill relates to farming, in which case the seed are quarter inch is what they're raised to before they're distributed from the single mariculture hatchery that we have for the state of Alaska, which is in Seward. So the a few of the adults are flown and raised in Seward in the hatchery, and then they spawn them by raising the temperature of the water so that they spawn, and then those eggs and sperm in the water form larvae. They raise in the hatchery the right kind of algae, plankton, that they feed on, and then they raise them up till they're about a quarter inch, and then they're called seed. And at that time, they sell them to farmers who will plant them. And generally what they do, most farms are about 5 acres. And, you know, you have a 5 or 6 year rotation. And so what you try and do is, just like you would with trees, you rotate crops. So you plant, you want all of one size. So it's much more efficient for harvesting. And they're generally in southeastern, they're subtidal. And they are raised that underneath the water and use divers. The bottom that they're in is a very, you know, muddy kind of bottom. It's not a gravel bottom. You can't have a whole lot of turbulence and wave action. These clams are such that once they settle in, you know, when they're only this big, they start growing in that one place and they never move. They're not like clams that are razor clams that can dig in. If you take one of these clams and put it out, pull it out, it's not going to dig back in. So they live in one place. Once they start growing, that's where they are. They're non-mobile. And so that's the farms that we have down here in southeastern. There's also the wild fishery down here, wild stock fishery. In other words, you have gooey ducks as natural stock down here. And they they survey an area with fishing game and all, and when they run transects to find out how many clams they have in an area and what the population is, and then fishing game will establish an area, and then they'll have an open season where anybody that has a dive permit for the fishery can go out, and they're in a skiff or a boat, and they have a water injection, so they have a wand that they put in and basically beside the clams so that it lifts the clams out and you can pull them out without breaking them apart. So that's the way they're harvested. Now there's also some intertidal clams down here in southeastern, and there is one farm north here of Juneau which has gotten a permit to do them intertidally. In this bill, we're saying that north of here it's only subtidal, and we've done that for a reason, to prevent conflicts between the subsistence fishermen that walk the beaches and harvest other clams and things, and people that take their skiffs or, you know, maybe they're sailing or they're whatever, and then they take their skiffs ashore. If you have intertidal, that's where it gets exposed as the tide goes out. Generally what happens is you have to worry about seabirds and seagulls, and so they put on this predator netting across the top to keep birds from eating in subtidal. And so what we're trying to do is prevent those conflicts in areas of the state beyond Southeastern. And so that's what this bill does. And the only reason this bill is necessary is because Fish and Game has a policy that if there aren't native stocks in the area, they will not let you bring in the stock and farm them. The problem with that is that, first of all, there's two things. We definitely don't want to have invasive species. But there's a long history with geoducks. They've been farmed and they've been wild in Puget Sound and Canada and here in Southeastern for, you know, millennia. These are very long-lived species. They live to, depending on which record you look at, 140 to 160 years. One of the longest-lived animals in the world. And so they're very, very good at not having diseases. You know, if they were prone to diseases, they wouldn't. In fact, they're an interesting animal because if they have something in their body that is a growth or something, a malady, they will actually transport through their tissue slowly over time that to the outside of their body. So if you can think, if we had a tumor and we were able to just take it out to the skin to get rid of it, that's one of the responses that geoducks have. And so they're an extremely interesting species, but they grow in deeper waters as well, down in Puget Sound. So,
thank you, Representative Wilson. Before you go on, Representative Kawasaki has joined us. Thank you. And I understand you're on the airplane from Anchorage?
We made it.
Excellent. Thank you. That's good. That's good news. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, you're doing this basically because of the hatchery in Seward?
Oh, well, the real reason that we are proposing this bill is because we have many rural communities that have a hard time having an economic base. And here we have a very valuable clam species, the most valuable clam species in Alaska. And we have a way to allow these rural communities to have an economic base. And the interesting thing about this being an economic base is it's not dependent on a wild stock coming in like when the salmon run or when the herring run. Part of the big problem with doing enhancements on the economics is generally everything occurs at the same time. So if you're trying to fish one species, well, if you're harvesting geoducks, you can harvest them whenever it's appropriate for you. So if it's a salmon season, you may have a community not harvesting geoducks. Or it might turn out that it works out great to tender them at the same time. But those are economic choices that can be made, but there's nothing that coincides with the harvest of geoducks. And so what this is going to do is provide an economic opportunity throughout the rest of Alaska that's available in Southeast. And it's not in competition with Southeast. The market is so large for this that our problem in Alaska is we have so few geoducks that we're not seen as the major player that is able to get the highest price. If we had a more consistent supply throughout the year, the price would be up. In other words, the Southeast would probably benefit if there's also geoducks out of South Central because there's more consistency of supply. And so that's what we're looking at. Also, there is a question of if you move a clam to another area, is it going to spread out? We've had the same thing with oysters, and oysters are the most farmed species in Alaska. Most of the spat or the seeds are either brought in from Washington or Oregon, actually imported into the state, or raised in Seward. But legally you can bring them into the state, and that would not be allowed here. I mean, you cannot go to Washington or Canada and bring in, import into the state of Alaska any seed for geoducks. You'd have to use native Alaskan stocks. So that's the economics that drives this, as well as we have the mariculture hatchery in Seward, And its business plan revolves around being able to sell enough product so that it can become self-sustaining. And one of the problems has been with all the problems of...
Representative Seaton, if I might, Representative Gutenberg, you have a question regarding something revolving around a point close, or...
I was going to make a comment about that, and that gooey duck, similar to a Henway, but if you get past what we're doing here, you know, if we pass this legislation, and it passes, you know, the other body, Fish and Game has had concerns about the viability and other things. And there's no fiscal note here. Are they going to do the research before they introduce it, or is somebody just going to put it into the water? Do they need a permit to do that? Are they going to be able to get it from Fish and Game?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative, if I can finish this question first, and then I'll, it's kind of related, but Representative Wilson, the hatchery in Seward, his business plan relies on being able to sell enough product to be self-sustaining. And what's happened is there's been a real slowdown in the development of farms in Southeast because there's a competition between the wild stock and the divers that want to harvest wild stock and the people that want to farm. Generally, you want to farm in an area where gooey ducks are going to grow, but then the wild harvest don't want to... want to keep that area because that's where wild stocks are growing. So that's really hampered and slowed down the development of gooey ducks. And you get rid of all of those questions if you go into an area that doesn't have a native stock of gooey duck, because you're planting your farm and you don't have a competition with divers that are harvesting wild stock. And so I hope that answered your question. And Representative Guttenberg, there are a number of issues about transferring clams from one place to another. All of those still are in place, whether you have to get a permit that requires that they be tested, that they're not diseased, and all of those kind of things. You have to give notice before you can move them. Before you sell, you have to have PSP testing as well. So all of those things stay in place. The only thing this does is say that the Department of Fish and Game cannot say, because there aren't any gooey ducks on Kodiak Island, we will never allow anybody to have a gooey duck farm on Kodiak Island, which has been their position right now. They've said, there aren't any north of, there weren't any north of Juneau, and they permitted some north of Juneau. That's the intertidal farm up here. But there weren't any north of Southeast, and so therefore, even though they're an Alaskan species, we will not give anybody a permit to raise gooey ducks. Now, they do it for oysters. We have a huge oyster farm operation in Kachemak Bay and in Prince William Sound, and those oysters are up there, and they are they don't reproduce because the water's too cold. And so that's been a great boon for the farmers up here, is because they're edible all year round. When they're ready to be reproductively active, they become bitter. And so people are having to shut down their operations in the lower 48 for many months while they wait through the reproductive cycle. And then the oysters regain some weight, and then they can sell them again, because if you sell very many bitter oysters, you're not going to have a good market. And that's been the beauty of like Kachemak Bay. They never reach sexual maturity because of the water temperature, and therefore they're sellable all year round. So that's part of what's been happening here. And in gooey ducks, even though they allow oysters to be imported, they don't allow gooey ducks to be moved from Southeastern to the rest of the state, and it's got a good economic potential for the rest of the state.
Follow-up, President Goodman.
Well, the from the science perspective, just because you don't know doesn't mean there's not an adverse reaction. So, and I noticed you've got the comments out of Wikipedia from the Environmental Defense Fund that seems to like it, but I'm just concerned what our local biologist and fisheries and aquaculture folks are actually going to do.
Representative Gutenberg, I believe the department is on record of not supporting this in the last committee. They have failed to have someone, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think they were not, they were neutral on it. It would be a better way of saying it. And I notice they don't have anyone in the room today, so I don't know that they've got terrible, I can't speak for them, but they're not here. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions.
Okay.
Is that all right?
That's absolutely appropriate.
Okay.
You may have more than that if you'd like.
I probably will.
Okay.
But anyway, okay, when fertilization takes place, if I understand it right, it's just into the water and then it happens somehow. What are the numbers? I mean, when that happens, is there like 10,000 of them? Or what are the numbers from one pair, you might say?
Thank you, Representative Wilson, through the chair. All clams reproduce the same way. You have female clams that squirt out hundreds of thousands of eggs, and you have male clam that throw out hundreds of thousands of millions of sperm. And then they're in the water column, and by pheromones or chemical attraction, they find each other. You know, very few numbers do, and they then they form into larvae. And those larvae are really indistinguishable from one clam to another. I mean, if you're a clam scientist, you might be able to tell the difference between one clam larvae and another. But generally, you can't, you know, they ecologically, they do exactly the same thing. They act the same way. They're eating basically the same same kind of plankton in the water. And then they settle. In other words, after a certain time, and the time depends on the species, what they do is they hit the right kind of substrate. If you have a razor clam, it will not settle in mud. I mean, that larvae will come down and basically taste the ground or touch the ground, and if it's mud, it won't settle there. And if it's rock, it won't settle there. It needs gravel, you know, of a certain size, or sand of a certain size. And don't ask me how they can tell, but they do, because they won't settle. I mean, you know, there have been all kinds of experiments. So each species settles to the appropriate substrate, whether that's very rocky or where there's a high lot of energy, or whether it's a much more muddy, like gooey ducks will settle in the mud, but they won't settle in a rocky area. And so that's the way they settle. But there are, yeah, when you have a spawn, and it doesn't matter whether it's sea urchins, you'll have countless billions of eggs and sperm released into the water all at the same time. Generally what happens is when one spawns, it sends out a chemical stimulus, and then everybody else says it's time. And then they all start spawning at the same time. And it looks like herring spawn. You know, you see the pictures of herring spawn where the whole water is totally white from herring spawn. It's the same kind of thing. You have spawning at the same time. And it doesn't matter which kind of clam or whether you're talking about mussels, they all do the same thing. And, you know, larger animals put out more eggs and sperm, but generally larger animals, you have fewer of them.
Okay. Another question or follow-up?
Another question.
Okay.
Hasn't anybody in kind of a laboratory situation tried to see how many eggs and how much sperm, and so how many, you think, I mean, they do it in lots of other animals, and I'm just wondering if they ever did it with gooey ducks. Maybe they just don't, maybe it hasn't ever been done. I don't know.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I'm sure they do, because the hatchery goes up there and spawns the animals. And Dave Hetrick, the hatchery manager, will be online, and we could ask him that question.
Okay.
But he'll and he'll not only be able to give you an idea of how many go out, but in the laboratory, you know, where they're confined and they mix and have a lot more chance of forming a zygote, as far as how much how many you get out of a fertilizing pair. But in the wild, you know, the gooey ducks may be spread quite a ways apart, so it's a lot less.
All right.
Representative Wilson.
The other, thank you. The one thing, so right now, you really don't know right now if this book, this bill passes, you really don't know yet whether it's even possible to make them grow up there where they're not growing now.
Madam Chair, or Representative Wilson through the chair, I don't see any problems with growth up there because we have the hatchery in Seward, which is not only maintaining live adults, but then raises the temperature up and spawns those adults and then raises the juveniles up to the seeds and then sells them back to people in Southeast. So, you know, the chance of them rearing up there is extremely high. Now, the chance of them reaching spawning and actually spawning in the wild is quite questionable. I mean, exactly like oysters. Oysters are imported up there and they never spawn. And it may well be the same with these guys. And the but it should be noted that the niche in the environment that they occupy is a muddy bottom, and kind of like in coves. And really, the you've got some polychaete, segmented long worms that live in that mud, and you have tunicates. But what they've actually found, and then there was some question. Well, gee, would the gooey ducks displace the natural fauna, the worms and tunicates? And what they actually found was that they did these studies and found that you actually had more worms and more tunicates where you had gooey ducks introduced, because it gave some relief to the bottom, gave some complexity to the environment, and so they actually had more of the natural fauna once you had gooey ducks farms in the area. So that they have seen no diminishing of the natural flora or fauna when you had gooey ducks introduced, because it's a, muddy bottoms are pretty homogeneous. There's not a lot. Normally what you have to have in nature is some complexity to the environment to get a lot of different things to live there. And so gooey ducks actually give some complexity to the environment.
Representative Wilson.
So it is true that at this time, we don't know if they're going to survive and live up there. I mean, we know they can in a hatchery, but in on the actual beach that itself, and where you're not changing the temperature, that it's out in the wild, we really don't know yet how it's going to be. But you want to do this so that there, the possibility for those areas to have another income is the reason where you want this bill.
That's correct. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I don't think that there is a problem with raising planted seed. The question is, will those, as they mature, will they reach sexual maturity and will they actually reproduce in the colder northern waters? And, from the farmer's standpoint, he probably hopes they never do. I mean, it's best if they don't. Because then you can sell them all year round and those kind of things. If they do become sexually active up there, the habitat that they need are these muddy bottoms. And you have to have not only muddy bottom, but you have to have the right kind of upwelling so that you have a good amount of plankton and those kind of things. So that's all depend upon the individual situation. And there isn't any state money that's going to be needed to be committed to going out and doing research on this. This is going to be the private parties, might be the villages. Like, I have several villages in my area, Nunwalloc and Port Graham, and they live in bays with coves and all those things, and I would presume that they would be looking at seeing if any of those areas that they have access to would be available for this, because there's nothing else on those muddy bottoms that is economically viable. And there's, the seaweed and all that they harvest is all on rocky bottom. So on the muddy bottom, like I say, you have some polychaete worms and you have tunicates, and that's about what you have there that is harvestable. But there is no really subsistence usage of those lower areas anyway, because the natives have traditionally not been diving for those. They use the intertidal area, and this bill specifically excludes the intertidal from being a farm.
Representative Seaton, I think one of the things that I want to kind of bring out here is if we pass this bill, I don't anticipate a bunch of people running out and start farming. They're still going to have to go to their bankers. They're still going to have to get financing. They're going to have to go through Department of Fish and Game for permits. There's still quite a process that has to happen once this, if this bill becomes law. And so what this is the first step to kind of start that process and give the Department of Fish and Game the opportunity to at least start looking at it. So I think, is that, am I mischaracterizing that, Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And also, for someone to get a farm, they have to apply to the Department of Natural Resources, who has to, you know, look it up, take all the information, and look and see if there are conflicting uses and those things, and grant the permit for the farm. And then Fish and Game is granting the permitting for the moving of seed on, and when you move any adults or sub-adults from one farm to another, all of those things require a permit from Fish and Game. All those health and safety conditions would still be in place. It's just issue, all this deals with is the one condition where Fish and Game has been saying, well, we won't let anybody else try to do this as an economic base in any other part of the state other than Southeastern.
Representative Wilson.
I hope this is my final question, sorry.
I hope it's not.
But, okay, now, does this make a difference? Now, because currently in Southeast, if I remember correctly, you can't get a permit in an area that doesn't have natural geoducks there now, I think. Or can you get them in an area where there's none?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the problem in Southeastern is that you can't get a farm permit easily in an area that does have geoducks because you've got a wild stock,
that's it, yeah.
And then you're trying to put the farm in on top of the wild stock, and then you have to figure out, well, this is a natural resource. It's owned by all of the people of the state. How do we apportion how much those are worth, and how, and we make people put bonds up for harvesting the ones that were left, even if they go through and have a commercial harvest. Then the idea is, well, we could have a natural stock that would come in and settle, and what's the value, because we've given you 5 acres of the bottom here, and how much should we basically charge you and make you replant at the end of your lease and for the natural stock. And none of those things would be a problem outside of this area. The big contention, if I might, Mr. Chairman, the big contention is these larval drift zones. And I think in your packet you have a thing that shows the larval drift zones. And those larval drift zones are generally made to make sure that you don't contaminate the genetics of an existing population. In other words, if we had a genetic population in Southeast Alaska, you wouldn't want to bring in a population from Puget Sound or from someplace else, because, you know, you're mixing those genetics. That problem is totally gone from north of Juneau, because there are no native stocks north of Juneau. And so we don't have to worry about contaminating an existing wild stock population.
Yes, I do have any.
Representative Wilson.
Okay. And I don't see it now, but I remember it from before. We have done things like this with other species, maybe not shellfish species, but other species, fully thinking that no problem was going to be, and then later on, we're going crazy with them. And what would happen? What would happen? Because if I remember right, it kind of goes up toward Yakutat, and then it, somewhere along there it stops in one group, and then another one group starts or something. But what happens? What is the ramifications if we do mess up and somehow those drifts get together, and so we do mess up on the I don't know what you call
larval
it.
Larval drift zone.
Yeah, if they cross. I mean, there's one place where they may. I mean, we don't know. and I mean, maybe there's an earthquake or something, and so that happens, and they drift together. What are the ramifications if that does happen?
Well, the ramifications of the larval drift zones was to maintain the genetic integrity of the stock in that area. We have no stock in areas 2 or 3, so we don't have any stock to contaminate with other genetic stocks. So that's not a problem.
So you're follow
up, Representative Wilson.
So you're going to use the same things that are in southeast to be up there. So yes. If they did, they wouldn't be any big deal.
Through the chair, that's exactly true.
Okay.
Additional questions? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The temperature, you said in Darren Seward, they raise the temperature to a certain degree, and then that's when they start reproducing. What's that temperature?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, we will have on the hatchery manager from the Seward hatchery in just a little while, and he can tell you what that temperature is for both oysters, which they grow there, and gooey ducks, which they grow there.
Representative Seward, is that Mr. Hetrick?
Yes, Jeff Hetrick.
Hetrick, I have him down for questions only, so now might be appropriate if he's not going to testify. Jeff, are you online? Mr. Hetrick, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. Did you hear the question from Representative Tuck?
I believe so. The gooey ducks that we have here, in fact, responding today, we typically hold them around between 7 and 10 degrees Celsius, which is slightly below 50, between 45 and 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And then when we prepare to spawn them, we feed them pretty heavily for a week or so and raise the temperature to around 12 degrees. And that usually initiates spawning if we've fed them and handled them properly.
And would you, Jeff, would you translate that into Fahrenheit?
Yeah, 12 degrees Fahrenheit would be approximately 1.8 plus 50, so it would be 54 degrees.
Thank you. Representative Tuck, follow up, or does that answer your question?
No, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so we just got passed out a larva drift zones map. And looking at the latitude, if you will, of southeast, and then looking out at the Aleutian chains, and they are successfully reproducing in the wild, will we see that possibly they can be reproducing in other areas of Alaska where the waters might be warmer on their own?
I believe it's possible. However, the right food source needs to be there. And also, you need to have a temperature pretty elevated for quite some time. It's not strictly a one-episode thing. You'd have to have the temperature being around that warm, say 55 degrees to 60 degrees for a long period of time, which typically doesn't happen in South Central. Now, perhaps it will out with the currents and the Aleutians in the Kodiak region.
Mr. Hetrick, do I understand there are wild stocks of gooey duck out in the Aleutians?
No. What I'm saying is that the temperatures out there, perhaps with those currents during the warmer summer months, might exceed those in South Central Alaska, Prince William Sound, and Lower Cook Inlet.
So, and I thought I understood Representative Tuck's question to be that there maybe was there were natural stocks on the Aleutians, and that's not the case. So maybe if I misunderstood, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, actually, I was just kind of curious if we happen to start farming out on the Aleutians, if they would start reproducing on their own, just because the temperatures may be able to reach those higher temps for quite a while. So that was, I was just basically wondering if, and if I may follow up one additional.
Representative Tuck.
Is it possible that if they do start reproducing, that you can still harvest all the clams before they get to that point? Is that possible? Or how is it ensured that you're catching all the catch that's been planted?
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuck, generally you're talking about a 7-year on, size for sexual maturity. If they were going to reach sexual maturity, and they would probably harvest them below that size, because, first of all, they want to make sure that an animal uses a lot of energy and its body mass when it's reproducing. So you wouldn't want to slow down that growth rate if you could help it. And also in the Aleutians, people should realize that if they would spawn naturally, there's not a lot of places that don't have a lot of high-impact beaches. You know, you have to have a fairly sheltered cove with a muddy bottom that is proper habitat. So if you don't have the proper habitat, especially on these animals, remember these are totally non-mobile animals. I mean, once they settle, they stay in the same place. They don't go, they're not like a shrimp or a crab or something else can wander around and eat something else. I mean, they are stuck in one spot, and they filter feed with plankton out of the water. So you have to have the right plankton, and you have to have the right substrate, because if you don't have a muddy substrate that's deep enough, you don't have the right place for these clams to live. So it's out, especially when you get out to the worst weather places in the world, you're not finding many of those places that have fairly shallow muddy bottoms. So it would be a number of places out around Unalaska. You have a, you know, large bays that have some coves and things, but people will have to look and search long and hard to find the right spot for a farm, and they'll have to be looking at satellite photos and of what the upwellings and the plankton blooms are and those kind of things. I mean, it's not just, oh, I'll go to some place and say, oh, I'll do a farm here. You've got to do a lot of research. But nobody's doing the research now because they can't get permit, even if they find what appears to be a good spot for them to live in.
Representative Todd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. And thank you, Representative Seaton. The on this, since there is so much research that has to take place, and it sounds like Kodiak may be an area that may be able to sustain this type of agriculture, this type of fishery, that would the Fish and Game be able to put limitations on, you know, based on the research that's done, on whether or not there should be this type of fishery based on possibly reproduction? Is that the only concern that we have, the Fish and Game has, is possible reproduction and becoming invasive?
Representative Tuck, I don't know that Representative Seaton can speak for Fish and Game, but I do have a note from them that they don't have anyone to testify, but their official position is neutral, but they do have concerns, and I think that's exactly, that's the concern.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank
you. Is that all, Mr. Tuck?
Yeah, if they're feeling comfortable, I feel more comfortable too, but I think that's the only concern that I have, is just making sure, and I'm just trying to exercise. I like the idea. I love the idea. But I just wanted to make sure that we're covering all bases, ensuring that existing habitats are safe, and that I don't see any problem with them being able to reproduce on their own if they happen to do so. They do stay in one area. They are contained. And I understand that you do want to harvest them before they get to that point, because they do, like oysters, unless I'm wrong, get bitter. And so there is a desire to make sure that happens. I'm just covering all the bases. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Wilson?
I wasn't here, Mr. Chairman, for a week. Was this bill heard this year?
This
the first time this bill was heard this
fisheries.
Year?
This is the first time this bill has been heard in resources, but it was heard in fisheries. And I have the luxury of sitting on fisheries.
Oh, okay. Well,
and I think you heard the same bill last year in fisheries and maybe in this committee as well.
It would just be nice to have Fish and Game here to voice their, if they have any concerns, I would like to hear them. I know they did before, but I can't remember. Exactly. Is there going to be are you planning to move this bill?
Madam Chairman, Representative Wilson, I'd like to move this bill out today. The Department of Fish and Game is aware of this bill. If they had any concerns, I would anticipate them being here. If they have concerns and aren't here, then we've got a different issue to deal with. So if they're not prepared to come forth and state that they are concerned or not, I think we need to deal with the information we have in front of us. And I'll read what the note said. Official position is neutral with concerns. And those concerns are the potential of this plume. And once again, we're not saying there will be farms. We're just giving them the opportunity to look in it and permit it. It's a long, long process before anyone plants a gooey duck in the mud of Cook Inlet or Prince William Sound or any of those other areas. So they will still have all the permitting process. And if they have those concerns, I would anticipate at that time they've never been bashful before, and I don't anticipate them being bashful again. Representative Wilson.
Okay. And I guess because I have GUI ducks in my area, I just want to make sure that nothing bad will happen, because that is a wonderful industry. And now, I'm just going to give you this scenario. I have no idea, and if there's someone here that can answer this, I would like to hear it. But I have no idea how vast the demand is. I don't know. Is it being met 90%, or is it being met 50%? And there's still a lot out there. And the reason I say that, I'm just looking. Look at Cook Inlet. I mean, there's a lot of mud. And I don't know if they could grow in that area or not. I have no idea. But I mean, what would happen if we just did it all over, and there were so many that it dropped the price way down? Is that a possibility? I don't know. And then it would destroy the effort that everybody's put into it. Is that a possibility? Does anybody know the answer to that?
Representative Seaton.
Representative Wilson, through the chair. We've had contact, and I believe there's some representative of Southeastern Farmers here, but we've had contact with them on the bill in the past as well, and they have been supportive of the bill because the problem with Alaska getting the best price that they could is because we have a very limited supply. If we were a more major player in the market, and there is a limitation on how many are available in Asia, if we were a more consistent and larger percentage supplier of GUI ducks, we would be able to, at least their estimation was we could get a higher price. But right now we're kind of a peripheral player. We're very small production compared to Canada or Puget Sound. And so we don't command the, shall we say, the respect in the market. We're a side player. And that's been the input that we've gotten from the folks that are marketing, is that if Alaska was producing more GUI ducks, we would be able to have a much stronger position in the market. So I believe there's some folks here that could testify to that better than I, but that's been the context that we've had with the producers here in Southeast Alaska.
So, Bob.
Representative Wilson, and I would like to go ahead and move on to public testimony, so if this is something we could take up in committee discussion, but I will go ahead and we hold the questions until we take some public testimony, we can get some of these answered. Representative Wilson, we'll give you the flexibility to follow up on that question.
Well, I hope that the people that want to testify, if they know the answers to this, they've been listening, and I hope that they will feel comfortable about making some comments.
Thank you. Any other question of the sponsor before we move on to public testimony? Thank you, Representative Seaton. If you'd like to join us back up here or sit there, whatever your pleasure. And with that, we have in the room, I think, Roger Painter. And he is the owner of a proud GUI duck. Or a proud owner of a GUI duck. I'm not sure how proud the GUI duck is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For the record.
For the record, my name is Roger Painter, and I'm president of the Alaskan Shellfish Growers Association. And I would like to thank Silver Lining Seafoods or Trident Seafoods for providing the GUI duck for your viewing pleasure today. In response to Representative Wilson's question on the market size, the market for GUI ducks is pretty large. It's been growing. And mostly it's associated with the expansion of the Chinese economy, as the individual Chinese have gotten more income, there's been more a demand for GUI ducks, so the market demand has been growing. I also should point out that in very few years, something like 15 years at the most maybe, a gooey duck farming industry has developed on the West Coast. It's currently worth about $80 million this year, and I think we're going to see a lot of growth there. It might come down to a question of who should profit from that growth. If there's opportunity for Alaskans to share in it, I think that would be a good thing, because aquaculture production of gooey ducks is likely to grow regardless of what happens with the wild stocks. I think it's important to point out that gooey ducks are not an invasive species. That's something you hear a lot about, a lot of concerns about invasive species. They're an indigenous species to Alaska. They are not very prone to disease. There have been many inspections of gooey ducks by the state's pathology lab. They've been very clean animals. As Representative Seaton pointed out, there is no concern about genetics. So the question really comes down to in this bill is definition of the natural range of the species might be one concern that people would raise. And I'd like to point out that that's very fleeting. If you look at, we have plenty of examples in Alaska that are occurring right now as the water temperatures change, as sea ice retreats. We see massive shifts of resources in the Bering Sea now. And the range of the animals in the Gulf of Alaska also is changes according to the temperatures. And, you know, the rise and fall of the crab stocks and Pacific cod stocks and pollock in the Gulf of Alaska can really show just what happens as the water temperatures change. So it's a the oceans are very dynamic, and trying to predict where the range of a species will be over a period of time is very difficult to do. And a good example might be purple henge rock scallops. Originally, people, Fish and Game, thought the only stocks in the state were found in southeast, but oyster farmers in Kachemak Bay have captured tiny scallops in their oyster gear, and they've been grown to maturity, and it's certainly clear in that case that the natural range of the species is much farther than ever imagined. And I think as we see the effects of climate change over the next few decades, we're going to see many shifting of species around the state. I also like to point out that this really is about economic development. As the chairman, as you pointed out, if Fish and Game did have serious concerns about that bill, you could bet they'd be at this table. The department did raise some concerns a couple of years ago, and I think through the committee and legislative process, it was shown that those concerns they did voice turned out to not be so serious, I guess. And that's why you see them, their absence from the table as good testimony to that this bill does not present a serious biological concern or a habitat concern. And I think it's also important to point out that species have been moved all around this state, and sometimes the results have been good, and sometimes the animals have died out and not survived. But I can't remember any examples of there being serious problems with competition from other natural species from the movement of these stocks. At one time, I was able to get a permit to take stocks of purple-edged rock scallops from southeast and try to grow them out in the Aleutians and see if they would grow. I did get a permit from Fish and Game to do this. Unfortunately, the animals got, we got held up by weather and for 3 or 4 days, and they didn't survive the trip, so we weren't able to see how they survived. But I did get permits from Fish and Game to do that, and again, if there were serious concerns, I think you would certainly see Fish and Game at the table. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Mr. Hedrick? Seeing none, thank you. Dave Odness, are you online from Cordova?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, Dave. Identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is David Otness. I'm a third-generation Alaskan commercial fisherman, and I've been involved with this mariculture industry for going on 12 years now. And I'd like to preface this by thanking Representative Seaton for his dogged perseverance throughout all this. I've, over the past 4 years, testified on this bill or similar ones from Homer, Seward, and now Cordova, because I believe in the future of this industry. If we take the time to look at this in perspective, there's a huge void in our coastal economies, and the fact that we have species that will grow here for free in these nutrient-rich waters, I mean, there's nothing quite like it. It's almost a tragedy that we have not advanced much further than we have, because it's really never gotten the hearing and opportunity to grow that it should have. And I'm going to continue to be a strong advocate for this. In fact, during the transition period of the governor gaining office, I served on her ADF&G transition team, and this was a large focus of the work I did, whereas everybody else was pretty well concentrated on commercial fishing as established. And we almost like to joke amongst ourselves that we've become the gray oyster cult while waiting for this industry to get off the ground and get the support we feel it deserves. And I'd like to thank the legislature again and again for having the wherewithal to hear this out and give us funding for PSP and other venues to where we're not really getting a lot of satisfaction from other branches of government right now. In fact, maybe you guys can all blame me for needing that funding, because I served the governor first oyster ever in Seward at a fundraiser back in 2006, and we never did get the PSP funding after that. So, but on a serious note, another benefit that might come with gooey ducks in my area in particular right now, at say Prince William Sound, we don't ever really show paralytic shellfish poisoning as an issue, whereas it is still an issue in Southeast Alaska, and that's been a factor in getting the market price, because a lot of the harvested gooey ducks down there have to be tested in our DEC lab, and therefore you can't really ship them live after going through the quarantine period. It's too long. So that kind of points good things in our direction. Cordova, many of you might not know, but Cordova was the largest razor clam source in the entire world before the earthquake, which raised the land around here and also shocked so many of them out of existence. And they've never really had a chance to come back because of all the sea otters. There's a a lot of predation, but the potential, the sediment bottom around here would just be more than likely magnificent for growing gooey ducks. I mean, they're just, and once again, it's all that nutrient-rich water that could provide a substantial industry here. And Cordova's the hurting unit like everywhere else. And this ties into maybe even House Bill 70 to the extent that we really could be doing a lot better for our state food security. And mariculture offers a lot there for very little input in terms of capital outlay, and a heck of a protein source that is available. And I really don't see the an issue with markets being flooded unless they're just, you know, existing markets which have been constrained up until this time. But we have to remember, though, the world is growing. I mean, we've got 6 billion people, and most of them will eat things other than just a vegan diet. So the potential to expand, I mean, once you guys have that chowder tomorrow, ask yourselves why you can't find gooey ducks at Sagaya's, or why you can't find them in the store, because it's like razor clams, you know. If you saw them in the store, you'd be buying them. But we just don't get a crack at having access to some of these really wonderful resources. But that's another level of development we need to take this whole industry in, is expose people to it and have those food products available. And I guess to wrap it up, I would address two things that were brought up. One by Representative Wilson, the idea that gooey ducks, their spat doesn't make it any further than it does. It's been hypothesized to me by knowledgeable people that any of the spat that's floating out of southeast gets hung up off Yakutat, and I believe they only have something like, well, a limited time span in which to sink down to the bottom. So whether they get caught in a gyre off Yakutat or the Yakutat Canyon washes them out, that's one story. And then to Representative Tuck, actually the Bering Sea, you might think those waters are warmer there, but you've got the Pacific abyss on one side right off the shelf, and then you've also got the Bering Sea trench that, I mean, we're talking going down thousands of fathoms of water, and the interchange of that water between the passes, you're not getting warm water per se. You might, by the time you get up into Bristol Bay, you might be having that, but generally that's cold water upwelling on both sides. And thank you for allowing me to testify. We've really wanted to see this industry take off, and it would really help our coastal communities to have an opportunity like this. And I really, after all this time, don't see the environmental issues or biological issues being any impediment any longer. And I guess Fish and Game finally taking a neutral stance on this would indicate that. And thank you all very much.
Thank you. Any questions for David Otness? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just mostly a comment. I commercial fished in South Naknek, right at the mouth of the Kwijak there, and there's been times that we've gotten into the water to warm up because it's been so cold outside. So I just wanted to point out that the waters can get warm.
Can I bounce back on that through the chair?
Absolutely. Go ahead. Identify yourself first.
Okay. David Otness again in Cordova, Representative Johnson. Yeah, Representative Tuck, I too work up there quite a bit. I've seen the Naknek River at 75 degrees and the bay at 65. I both drift out there, set net, and also run tenders. So, but it's the deeper water that is on either side of the Aleutians that's really quite cold. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is there anyone else online to testify? Is there anyone else in the room to testify?
Mr. Chairman.
Someone coming forward, you identify yourself and commence your testimony.
Paul Foose, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm representing PAC Alaska, and it is the largest farm holding company in southeastern Alaska. and has the longest experience in farming gooey ducks. We support this legislation, and overall the reason why is economies of scale. One is for the hatchery. The more spat the hatchery can produce, the cheaper it is. We get to pay 25 cents an animal now. It's pretty high, and we know that we don't get 100% survivability when we replant them. So it's a huge cost to the industry. This hatchery has been marginal ever since it got started just because of a lack of economies of scale. The other is economy of scale with the market, and the market is expanding as the middle class in China expands. But the biggest issue for us is to be able to supply on a year-round basis and have enough production that we sequentially do this. And this is what the oyster farmers do in Kachemak Bay, and it was a big breakthrough for them because you can sign a long-term contract and people know they can get that product year-round. It means a lot to a distributor, to a restaurant, and things like that. So that's where the increase in price comes from. You know, we saw with oysters, although they wouldn't reproduce in Kachemak Bay, they grow quite well because there's a lot of food there. It's just not warm enough for them to reproduce. And so I doubt there'd be any spawning, but even if there was, it just increases the overall productivity of the area. And if it went off the farm site, people could publicly harvest them. If there was enough, you could have a commercial fisheries on it. Nothing has shown them to ever cause any harm to anything. And if you were to have any species, one that sits there its entire life, that's what you'd want to do. So at times, I think it is necessary for the legislature to step into a situation like this because Fish and Game is going to be naturally cautious about any of this, and but for this species, I don't think there's much of a risk. And just as an example of this, I just wanted to point out that several years ago, we all know about the state's salmon hatchery program, and I think most people around this table would support that, and it's been a huge success for the state of Alaska, and you know, it's been a very well-managed program. Well, Fish and Game opposed that for exactly the same reasons. And that's why the legislature had to step in and create an entire division, the Fisheries Research and Enhancement Division, in order to move that forward. So by nature, they're going to be cautious. But I think if you look at it, you know, there really aren't any major concerns here. And the fact that they've stated that they're neutral, I think that that's a real advance for the department. And I think in good conscience, you could step in and make this policy call.
Any questions for Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right, currently the hatchery is there in Seward. Do we see maybe hatchery expansions as well, or would all the gooey ducks be supplied by the Seward hatchery? Do you see in the near future?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuck, there's been discussion of putting other hatcheries in. It's really much more efficient to have one large hatchery. There's been kind of another variant to this, is which you'd buy them from the hatchery at a much smaller size and then bring them down and put them in, which is basically the holding tank would be down here, hold them in the wild until they got large enough to where they could dig in. So that's kind of been a variant, kind of a split version of it that would be cheaper, but that hasn't actually been done yet.
Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how currently is the geoducks? Gooey ducks. Thank you. Gooey ducks making it over to the Asian markets. Are they being shipped over? Are they being air freighted over? Are they going to Washington first and then heading that direction? Or are we keeping track where the southeast markets are hitting?
Representative Tuck, to the chair, generally they're shipped out through Seattle or Vancouver. But what happens is that you've got to hold them for a period of time until DEC tests them for PSP. But they're on the next plane and out of here. And if there's any delays, you experience substantial dead loss of the animals before they can get there. So it's a race every single time you make the shipment to get them out of here, make the next connection, and get them into the Asian market.
Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the reason why I asked that is because just recently on our Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism Committee, we've had a presentation done with the Anchorage International Airport. And surprisingly, almost every airplane that returns back to Asia goes empty. And I see this as a possible, if we can get DEC to start doing the inspections here in the state of Alaska, potentially we'd be able to fill those planes a little bit more with Alaska products going back to Asia. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Foos? Thank you, Paul. Is there anyone else who would like to testify in the audience or online? Seeing and hearing none, we will close public testimony. With that brings HB 43, Gooey Ducks, back before us. Committee discussion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was just one point that I omitted in my testimony, and that is, if there are other restrictions on an area, this bill would not override those, such as Kachemak Bay, where I live. There is a critical habitat there, and part of the designation that critical habitat does not allow on-bottom mariculture. So it allows suspended mariculture with oysters, but it doesn't allow on-bottom mariculture. And this bill would not override that other land use designation. So just for clarity, this is, you know, this is just looking at fish and game and allowing outside of Southeast.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. And I do want to be clear that this doesn't mandate a farm. This doesn't instruct the department to go out and do anything other than give them the green light if, in fact, the economics are there and the biology's there and all of that stuff. So, Representative Gutenberg?
Yeah, on some of the comments, what you just said, Mr. Chairman, and what, from my impression, I mean, I heard this bill last year, and Fish and Game, you know, came out in opposition, not so much because they didn't support it, but because the answer is they don't know. And I know there was some talk last year about having grant money follow it to do the study. And some of the comments that we had last year is, well, this should have been, you know, this study should have been started 25 years ago. That way we would be so much ahead of where we are now. But there's no money following this now either. So what this bill basically does is it tells Fish and Game, you cannot use, there's no gooey ducks there now as a reason for not doing it. So they're not going to be able to stop it for those reasons. But there are people from Fish and Game and Fisheries did testify with those exact concerns. They don't know. And that is, I would be more concerned if scientists said they don't support it because they don't know. You know, the science, the science that's actually science, is a concern. And if, you know, if they were opposing it because they didn't know, because there's some situation that is directly in contradiction to simply it's over here and it's over there, that would be a whole different story. But I think the scientists are being responsible. But I'm not sure we are. I think if we're going to start this program, and probably as soon as this bill passes out of the legislature and the governor signs it, somebody's going to be applying for it and going to be setting this up, and we're not going to be able to study it. And it's going to be ongoing. And if something happens, you know, down the road, people are going to ask us, well, why didn't you study it? You know, no one knew anything about it. But we're not doing that. And that's, you know, we can't go back and start studying it 25 years ago, but we can start studying it now as soon as we do this. So there have been testimony in the Fisheries Committee by three different people with not neutral, but simply scientists saying, we don't know, so we can't say. I'm not sure I would paraphrase that as being neutral, but these are people that are concerned. But again, there's no money following this, and that's probably a tribute to the success of the bill, that there isn't a fiscal note. But if we're going to do something like this, I mean, we owe it not just to the people of the district and the people of the state of Alaska, but the mariculture industry to be able to tell them exactly what's going on, why this is progressing well, not so well, extraordinarily, what they can do to enhance it or not. So, I mean, this is a clear example of there's a whole other side of this that should be accompanying it down the road to actually do things. And I think, you know, it's part of building an industry and not having the grant money along the side to study it as it goes, for me, is a diminishment. So,
Representative Gutenberg, and I appreciate that. And I don't think that this will be, hopefully this will not be an understudied project, but that will be funded by the private sector and not by the government. And maybe that's a difference in philosophy between the two of us, but I think this will be studied. I think the Department of Game has, within their statutory and regulatory framework, the ability to see that that information is delivered, or they deny a permit. And if private industry can't do it, maybe they're back to us in a few years saying we can't. but this at least clears the way to start the dialogue, to start, and that's why I'm a supporter of this. Representative Guttenberg?
Mr. Chair, you have to have the framework for what is the ground zero, what happens before it's, you know, you introduce them. And I haven't seen any comments that anybody's ready to step up and put research dollars into studying that as far as the GUI ducts in place right now. Now, maybe it's been done already. Maybe Representative Seaton could say that, but we haven't heard that. All we know is that it's South Central. Just come right across the map, put them right in the same place, geographic location, and they should fit. But is everything else equal? I don't know.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess we have to look at the mission of different departments. And the problem is that it's really a misfit to have mariculture, farming, agriculture in the Department of Fish and Game, because the general mission of the Department of Fish and Game is to manage wild stocks. And yet we're asking for economic development and those kind of things that are not in the core mission of the Department of Fish and Game. So the Department of Fish and Game is generally the habitat watcher to make sure when a permit comes through for mining or something else that, wait a minute, here's, and the Habitat Division, and I strongly supported moving Habitat back to Fish and Game to make sure that that was, you know, their core mission when they were approving projects and permits. But here we're almost saying support that instead of looking at the habitat effects of a permit, we're putting it on them to do research and to look at promoting a economic interest of the state, and it's just not in their mindset. And so, you know, in fact, it was looked at moving the mariculture out of Fish and Game and moving it to agriculture or moving it to the Department of Commerce or moving it to somebody else. So then Fish and Game Habitat Division would utilize their expertise when reviewing permits that went through commerce or through agriculture. But, you know, that's not where we are. We're at Fish and Game has a total purview. And so it's a bit of a mixed message. Now, we have had a lot of research on farming. I mean, you know, there's GUI duck farms in Canada. There's GUI duck farms in Washington. There's GUI duck farms down here in Southeastern. And that was one of the questions we had the other day for the department. They said about some research, but there was no research that you could do in Southeast that would answer the questions that they were asking about what would be the effect of transporting them to South Central Alaska. You'd have to have them transport them to South Central Alaska and answer the questions there, but you would have already done what they were, you know, basically philosophically saying they weren't sure that they wanted to allow the transport of the animals. So it was this catch-22, and the legislatures had to do this a couple of times in the same situation. Before the 2 years before I got here, the legislature actually came in and mandated that the department would open up for permits and would grant 90 in the water column essentially oyster farms and 10 subtitle GUI duck farms and all this, because the department just wasn't in the mode of permitting farms, because they were only in the review for, they don't have any economic benefit side to them. I mean, that's not their job. That's not their core mission. And so the legislature came through and mandated that. And we're here in this same time frame. We're not mandating that they do farms. We're just taking away that one policy obstacle. And so I guess that's my response, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. I'm looking for a place in the bill for an amendment, but I don't see one, because I think it would be a wise thing for us to do, maybe. Any other discussion on House Bill number 43? I assume no one has any amendments for House Bill 43. I haven't seen any.
With that, what, no further discussion, what would be the will of the committee? I would entertain a motion, and we'll see where it goes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
I'd move House Bill 43 from committee with individual recommendations and attach fiscal note, zero fiscal note.
There is a motion before us to move House Bill number 43. Do I hear an objection? Hearing none, House Bill number 43 will move out of resources with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal notes. Is there any other business to come before the committee? Seeing none, I would like to let those people who were standing by, and I should have done this earlier, for HB 134. We are working with the department on some language, and that is the cruise ship discharge bill. We are working with the department on some language. They didn't quite get it to us in time for the 24-hour notice. My co-chair being out of town, that's the reason that wasn't heard today. We anticipate that being brought before the committee at the next hearing. And any, if there's nothing else to come before the committee, we will stand adjourned at 3:50 or 2:50.